Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, everybody, and thank you for tuning in. I'm Tanya Hathaway, your host of Tanya Talks, where your voice is heard and your story is told on Marty Oakley's TS Radio Network and Stephen Burke's KLRB 89.9 FM out of Oklahoma. I've got to tell you something. There's an awful lot of shares, a lot of shares going on right now. This coast has gotten this promo, this show, Free Mike Gaines, has got momentum, so much momentum. And that's what we need for anybody who is a victim of public corruption, but for somebody who is actually in line to walk that, whatever you call it right now. I get so nervous even thinking about it, to be essentially murdered, right? Or wrongfully convicted with no chance of parole. We need to get up, stand up, hold hands, set aside any stupid, silly, ridiculous little questions that we, or any ridiculous little differences that we might have, and unify in masses, because there's nothing that tears us apart more than those doggone career politicians who sit there and lick their chops, the corrupt ones. They lick their chops, and there's no, ooh, this is getting good. People are hating on each other. Ooh, yeah, yeah. Then they win. What we need here is for the victims of public corruption to win. And I don't care how old you are, how young you are, where you live, where you don't live, what color your skin is, what your religion is. What I care about is that we speak up when others can't speak for themselves. And that's what this show is about. And tonight, we're going to talk about Mike Gaines. A lot of people know about this case. A lot of people know. Oh, my gosh, there's so freaking much. There's so much activity going on right now. I'm getting messages. I'm getting all kinds of things. I've got people in queue that want to talk. This show will be continued on next Tuesday if we don't get it all done tonight. And don't get me wrong, it's not done until he's set free and until others are set free and until those heathens that are corrupting the public, that they actually fool us all. They duped us all when they're voted in. They're duped. Or if they are, or if they're put in office, they're appointed to office by somebody else who either knows better or doesn't know better. But what we do know is that when something goes wrong, it needs to be made right. And as soon as that is brought to the attention of the highest legal department in Oklahoma, and they poo-poo you away, I'm talking about, the illustrious Mike Hunter, the attorney general, who poo-poos people away because it's not part of his agenda. Well, let's see if we can help turn him around, if we can start getting the attention of Governor Stitt, let's just hope that he can do what he promised he was going to do. So far, his report card, I'd say, is a C, maybe a C minus. Well, we've yet to see. Let these people be free. Let these people be free. Give them a new trial, okay? Give them a new trial and actually let the jury see. Let the jury see the truth and the evidence that wasn't discovered until now or that you didn't let in to begin with. That's called due process, and that is a constitutional right. And I don't care what the Oklahoma Constitution says, because if they don't allow that, then they have perverted the Constitution, and I'm sorry, but screw them. Screw them, because they're not right. They are wrong. And if we keep letting those wrongs continue and being infiltrated when they send out these little press releases on themselves, patting themselves on the back, and when they selectively delete comments that are constructive comments, then guess what? That's illegal. Somebody just messaged me. You must be grading Stitt on a curve, LOL. I'm trying, man. I'm trying because I still want to entice him to wake the heck up. I don't know if there's any hope left for my Hunter because it's as blatant as it can be. And after the insidious and the repeated horrific behaviors, by not behaving, by not acting, by doing nothing, is just as guilty as doing something wrong. When it is your job, it is in your job description as a public servant, thank you, Mike Hunter, no thank you, to be there for the people. Not just to sell them on what you promised them that you were going to do. Not just to sell them and put out that pretty boy face, not. And the reason why it's not is because, in my opinion and knowledge, I believe somebody who is in that position is corrupt if they know there's RICO, if they know there's evidence that there's wrongful corruption, and if you know that there are people in the appeals court that are wrongfully quoting the lower court activities and making a decision on that, we got issues. We got real big issues. And nothing for nothing, I try to make these shows as much with no Republican, Democrat, this, that, or the other thing. So, and most people that know me personally know how I lean, but I don't care because it doesn't matter what you are. As far as your party goes, as far as anything goes, you cannot ever, ever dismiss public corruption, regardless of who you root for. And drain the freaking swamp in Oklahoma, because they are imposters, many of them are. Many of them are. There's some good people out there. There definitely are. Not every department, not every person who works in every agency is bad, but it is overall incessant. Wake up. We've got Glossop, Richard Glossop, death row. How many years has he been on death row? And people stepped in two or three different times last minute. He was spared from those lethal injections. You know, I got to tell you something. I don't know how I feel if anybody murdered my sons or, you know, anything like that. But if there was one iota of a possibility that was put out there that somebody didn't do it, how can you live with yourself? How can you live with yourself? Knowing that you're sending somebody to death. I don't know. It's just awful. It's just horrifying. Thank God, you know, we also have, not thank God for this, but we also have Perry Lott. Thank God he was exonerated. He was exonerated after 30 years. It's all in Oklahoma. After 30 years, he was exonerated. Oh, but guess what? He's on probation the rest of his life until they can tag the murderer on some, or the crime on somebody else. Go figure. Isn't it beyond a shadow of a doubt? It is supposed to be beyond a shadow of a doubt. Okay? It's not, oh, let me see. They said that he had a gold tooth. Oh, okay, this one has a gold tooth in the lineup, and then, oh, they did these little aluminum foil gold tooth teeth for everybody else in the lineup. Give it a break. Beyond a shadow of a doubt. Nothing fixed, nothing manipulated, nothing left out, beyond a shadow of a doubt. And this man is on probation the rest of his life until either Governor Stitt pays attention and will actually read the full accounting of his wrongful conviction that had this man in prison for 30 years and was supposed to be without no parole, just like Mike Gaines. And hopefully he will be the next one that comes out. So it's got to be exonerated, so he's got to be pardoned by Governor Stitt, or you got to go back and find out who the heck it was 30 years ago that did this to a woman. I mean, Fred, for the rest of his life, this is pinned on him. He's got to get permission to leave the state. But there's nothing that's beyond a shadow of doubt that proves that he did it. But still, he is chained. He is still chained. Don't get me wrong. He is happy to be out. And there's some great people that helped him get there. But he is still chained to that. And that label will never leave him, even if and when he is pardoned or the person who actually did the crime is found and proven beyond a shadow of a doubt. Come on now. We've got Daniel Holtzclaw. I know, that's a chilling one for everybody. That's a controversial one for everybody. But I challenge you all to actually delve deep. He was set up by somebody else, by others in the department that were protecting somebody else. It's mainstream media. It's a public opinion, given the perception that is put out there. You know how people say perception is reality? It is not. The perception of reality is only the perception of the perception. So we need to get real, especially when it comes to life and death, or life in prison. Tonight we have Bree coming on with us. Bree is an advocate in Oklahoma for wrongful convictions. And she is on tonight to discuss a case that she knows inside and out. We also have others that will be on with us, but our special guest, who you're all aware of, hopefully, and if not, you will be, because she's a nice little mainstay there for us. She is all about the belief of a conviction integrity unit. She's been on with us before on other shows, and I'm very pleased that she's on with us now, and her name is Melissa Hurry. And actually, Bree requested that Melissa come on as well. I know that we have Arthur Bean, who is a private investigator in Oklahoma, who works with Deborah Hampton Law Firm. He will have something to say tonight. Pardon me, I just know it. And I believe you will be hearing from others as well. So let's get this started. Although I am not an attorney, neither is Stephen Burke, neither is Marty Oakley, and neither Marty Oakley, Stephen Burke, myself, Tanya Hathaway, personally and professionally, can be held liable for any error in content
all are well vetted. If there seems to be an error presented, please email me at injusticeinoklahoma@gmail.com. I'm the first one to say, hey, I got something wrong here, and this is why. So just send that stuff in. Don't just tell me something's wrong. Show me something's wrong, because that's what we got. And that's why we have an awful lot people on that. I think there's one that was a little bit, where's the this and that, the other thing. But out of all these shows, and I spoke up about that one that, I kind of was like, well, what I mean? But listen to me ramble. But out of all these shows, we get it right. Sometimes the corruptors chime in on the side. They won't come on and talk with us. They'll say how wrong, they'll bully, they'll this, they'll that. Well, come on, show it, prove it. What do you mean so-and-so did that? Trying to deflect from the topic. Prove it. Let's go. So, I want to thank my mother in case she happens to be listening in. And I want to invite, and I want to welcome Bree. Bree, how are you tonight? I appreciate all the work that you do and how engaged you are with the Mike Gaines, Free Mike Gaines Matter. So I want to say welcome to you. Now, we had a great conversation and have sent a lot of information back and forth, so I appreciate that. How are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'm fired up, man. I'm fired up. Can you tell?
We can tell.
Let's get the truth out. And Melissa Hurry, are you there?
Hi, Tanya. I am here. Yes, I am.
I am so glad you're back on with us. Really am. And as I said, that Bree had specifically requested that you come on because she has heard you speak on our other shows, and she just loves the way that you are able to provide content and that should be better things for all those that are being corrupted by the system.
Well, I thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. And I know that you are very well aware of the case with Michael Gaines, and you shared that before. Michael Gaines, in 2003, it's quite a story. And if we once again, if we need to move this through to the next show, we certainly, absolutely will. Michael Gaines was found guilty of murder, and this was after being drugged and pretty much used as a he was used to present himself in a way that he wasn't really when he was found to be guilty. He was a young guy that was, just hanging out with the wrong people that used him, drugged him, and set him up. And there's a lot more to that story. There is nothing that has proven that he knows or didn't know about. Okay, hold on. Let's see. I've already lost audio, but we're still live. Okay. All right. So she's trying to get that fixed. All right. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So there's a number of circumstances that have been absolutely outrageous, and now some of those that actually were part of the setup have come forward on his behalf. And, oh, boy, what a story do we have to tell. So I am going to start with Bree, who can much more eloquently talk about the case. And can you also include where this happened, okay, any
sure.
of the names of, if you feel that you're okay with doing that, the prosecutor, the judge, the lawyers, you go ahead and you share that. Melissa, you interject because I know she wants to hear from you anytime.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Well, again, this happened in Lawton, Oklahoma in 2003. The judge at the time was Mark Smith, and Michael and another co-defendant were unable to get paid lawyers, but the other two paid lawyers that were involved was Emmett Taylor, who is now a judge in Lawton, and Ken Sue. Dorfel, I think, is how she says her last name.
Ken Sue Dorsey.
Dorsey, thank you.
Ken Sue Dorsey. Oh, my gosh. Her name comes up again. Holy smokes. Is this good or is this bad? Let me guess. It's bad. It's real bad. Am I right?
Well, it didn't benefit Michael, so I would say it's very bad. So,
yeah.
Okay. So the situation took place where he was picked up by the gentleman's names were Daniel and Dante. They picked him up to hang out, but they had already had a preconceived notion of wanting to drug him because they were planning to rob someone that they had a personal issue with that they owed money to. And they ended up, the other two guys that were going to participate in it decided not to. And so that's when they put it together that they had to do the next best thing and take the matter into their own hands. And that's when they chose to pick Michael and Timothy as the other guy up, and then they drugged them. And
who was ultimately murdered?
There was a gentleman in at the house named Travis that died.
Okay.
And so when they picked them up, drove around, you know, they spiked the blunt with PCP without their knowledge and gave it to them to smoke. And once they got them to the point of where they needed them to be from using it, that's when they asked Michael to go to the door and knock on the door to get the door opened so that the other two could come in and proceed to rob. The other two being Daniel and Timothy, to proceed to rob Chris, that's whose house it was. And because whatever commotion took place on the inside with taking things and that whatnot, it ended up being that Timothy, being under the influence of PCP, he ended up shooting Chris, who was the homeowner, and he also shot Travis, who is the gentleman that passed away. When they ended up getting caught, the three co-defendants, they did find the actual murder weapon on Timothy. In the autopsy, it shows that the actual bullet that took the life of Travis goes to the to the gun that Timothy had, which they were able to retrieve that because they have that. There was a second gun, but they don't have any of that stuff. They don't have, like, a gun at all. They actually have nothing on Michael pertaining to him actually being the one that pulled the trigger or anything in that nature, a first or second gun, basically, except for the statements that were all put together and coerced to show that he was the person. The two guys who put it together, which was Daniel and Dante, actually became the eyewitnesses for the state. And with them becoming the witnesses for the state, they received a 20-year deal for a robbery instead of them charging them with a felony murder, as they did Michael and Timothy.
Right.
Now,
right.
Michael had a public defender, and his name was Carl Bowen. They were from the indigents, either in Norman or Sepulpa, he did not have any sort of defense for Michael. He and I have talked, and he told me his defense was he was just going to go in and say Michael was 18, and that's all that was his whole defense.
That was
the
only defense he was using, which he thought was a slam dunk, right?
I assume so, but he never talked to any of his co-defendants. He had not talked to any of the material witnesses. He didn't do anything because he already knew that Daniel and Dante, having hired Ken Sue and Emmett, had already received a deal. They really tried to bully and badger Michael by going to his mom and threatening to give him the death penalty and basically telling her to say her final goodbyes because they were going to kill her son, unless she convinced Michael to take whatever the plea deal they were going to offer. And that was what Michael's lawyer did. And when that didn't work, they brought an ex-death row inmate in to talk to Michael to try and scare him and get him to take whatever plea deal they were providing for him.
Oh, my word.
Which,
right.
Right. And Michael asked to go to trial, and his lawyer would not honor that because he knew if he did, then it would interfere with what the plea deals were already done. But Michael was not a suspect right off the top when those three were arrested. Michael's situation didn't come into this later on when they needed a fall guy. And that's what they used Michael for, to clear the names of the two who actually put it together so that they were able to receive a deal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So with that being the case, Michael has received evidence for, or a recanted statement from his co-defendant. We have tried to use that to get it back into court, but they're not willing to listen. The courts aren't trying to hear anything we're saying. They refuse
Oops,
to
I'm sorry, I've got the windows open. Sorry about that, you guys.
Well,
sure, it's not as muggy as it is in Oklahoma, but it's muggy here in the Northeast right now, and you get to hear the screeching silly vehicles.
And,
okay, I apologize.
Bree, I just wanted to say something real quick, if you don't mind. I just wanted to reiterate the fact that both of these co-defendants are now out of prison, correct?
Yeah.
The ones
both
that
out.
Had made the deals, Daniel and Dante. So they're out of prison. Yeah, and they had received the lesser deals. They were the ones that had the private attorneys.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how money gets you, you go from life without parole to, hey, you know, let me just help you solve your case so you look good to the community.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, and that was my point for bringing that up, because it's often the ones who are the most susceptible to the injustice, the ones that can't afford the private counsel, the younger ones, the ones that don't have the means to properly represent themselves. So I just wanted to point out that the two that had actually masterminded the crime are now out of prison.
All because they received a deal.
I didn't want to interrupt you. I just wanted to make sure that everybody knew that those
were
out.
Is there a pattern here, Melissa? Is this a pattern?
There is a very big pattern of using witnesses to form a case and picking the easiest target possible, because how many cases have we seen where it's been one of the co-defendants who was susceptible to the injustice that took the fall? And it happens in Oklahoma, and it happens a lot. I'm not saying it doesn't happen everywhere else in the country, but we can come up with numerous cases where we have the same scenario. We have to stop and ask ourselves, what is really going on in this justice system? Why is this continuing to happen? Why is there no accountability? Why are they getting away with the things that they're doing and taking innocent lives? Because life without parole is taking of a life. If you're going to spend the rest of your life in prison, then what kind of life is that? And we have people on death row.
You've got somebody that, is accused of doing something. Just let's think of an example, what it's like to be accused of something and somebody actually believes them, right? And it really ruins your credibility. It hurts your feelings and all that. I mean, just think of an example. Oh, so-and-so stole something. They stole that $20 that was on my desk, and you didn't do it. And you didn't do it. How does that make you feel? For that stupid $25 when somebody, your credibility is at risk, right? Stupid $20 that really bothers you. Just imagine what it's like to be accused of murder when you didn't do it. Just imagine.
And then to lose your whole life behind something you didn't do. And that's the situation that we run into here. And Lawton is a very tight-knit town, because I've tried to, when we first started looking into this, I tried to talk to many of lawyers out there and ask them how they felt about assisting, with taking his case. And before they know who the parties are on the case, they're all on board wanting to take the case. But as soon as they know who's involved, they all become very tight-lipped and they don't want to take the case. I've even had someone call me before.
They'll take your money and they'll make matters worse. That's what I have found with the many people I've talked to, as well as in my own situation. Am I right, I know it rings true to a lot of people. And they'll just,
not
whatever,
not
because they are protected.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not pointing out any attorneys in particular, but not every attorney should take a death penalty case. Not every attorney should take a post-conviction case. You have to know what you are doing. And some attorneys will.
Because Michael's lawyer did not know what he was doing, and he told me that.
Absolutely.
He had no capital murder experience. So that was really a really bad situation within itself. And he had a large caseload. So he didn't have the time to take care of the case like he was supposed to.
Yeah. Well, these public defenders are, I mean, you're lucky if they remember your name, not to mention your case.
Absolutely. They're overworked. They're underpaid. I know that they are. But I just want to say, if I understand the fight of the public defender's offices, and it's a national thing, but you mm-hmm. have to understand that you have somebody's life in your hands, and for you to try a case, I mean, you have to go in there with your client's best interests at heart. And how many times have we seen there is no defense for some of these people that are convicted. And people, you know, there are still some people of the attitude, well, if he was found guilty, then he must be guilty. No, we have to stop that because it is not the case. There's other cases where it's clear an effective counsel, but what determines ineffective? That's up to the court. So,
right.
I mean, you can have an attorney who put a defendant and not present one witness or any evidence, and that person is convicted of murder and some sent to death row. And how do you convict a person of murder and send them to death row when you can't call one person to their defense, not an alibi witness, not anything? It's happened. It happens.
And
no,
it happens.
You have somebody like Michael who is bullied and scared at 18 years old into accepting a plea for a crime that, if you look at this case, he did not do.
Well, Kensel Dorsey has a reputation for doing that. And sometimes mm-hmm. even it's not what she verbally told you. I mean, she doesn't even, as far as I know, have a contract. She won't even have you sign a contract. So I'm not a fan of Kensel Dorsey. You know, because I have worked with other victims of not only the public corruption, but the condemnation, the support of the public corruption. And in my opinion, she's a bad person from everything that I know. So stay away from Kensel Dorsey, okay, out there in law. And stay away from her. Stay away from her. That's my opinion. That's it. I'm protecting my liability. But, you know, ask me what I know, and I'll tell you what I know to the best of my belief. Stay away from Kensel Dorsey. Stay away. She will have you allegedly pay you cash in the hall, in the stairwell. You have to pay her cash in the stairwell. She won't write you a receipt quite often, or in certain matters that I know of. If she does, it's on like a piece of a ripped off paper somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, it's crazy. You have to know. You have to know, and I know that she was on the side of these other guys, okay? I understand that she was they were getting paid money, so she did really good for them, setting up somebody who is not guilty of murder. Outrage.
And that's exactly what she did in this
case. She should be barred, sanctioned heavily, and in jail, prison. And there's a lot of people like that, but they're not. So we pay attention, Oklahomans, pay attention. We have a caller. We'll get back to the story more. We have a caller, 405. Hello, welcome to the show, and who might you be, and what's your comment?
Hi, my name is Jessica Gaines, and I'm Michael's sister.
Jessica, hi.
Hi.
I want to thank Tanya for what you're saying, and Mr. Marty, the producer, and Melissa, thank you so much for everything you're doing, and B, thank you so much. And I want to speak on the life without parole. That means that at 18 years old, that they decide Michael does not have a second chance at all.
Even if he was guilty, you're saying.
What was that? I'm sorry.
Even if he was guilty, you're saying?
Yes. Even if he was guilty, he has no chance at a second chance. At 18 right. years old, his brain was not fully developed. And he has learned his lesson. As his younger sister, he calls me often, and he advises me to make better choices. Don't go down the same path that he's made. He's the oldest of six kids, and he gives this advice to all of us. We have graduated high school and college because of Michael. We have attended his graduations in prison. He has reformed himself. He's not the same person that he was when he went in. One, he's not under the influence of drugs that he was forced to take. And two, he's had time to think and change his life. But
are you saying that he is innocent or guilty?
I'm saying that he is innocent and he needs
okay.
a second chance. I'm saying that he's innocent.
Right. So you're saying that, to the best of your knowledge, he did not commit the murder.
No, I'm saying we need to free Mike Gaines. He did not commit the murder, Weston. There's no way to prove that Mike Gaines was involved in the crime and committed the
okay.
crime that deserves a greater penalty than the two men that came up with the plan are walking free today.
Right. I agree. I agree 100%.
Yes.
I agree more than 100%. So what I'm hearing is that Michael Gaines was not the perfect person. He was partying. He was doing drugs, you know, but he wasn't involved in the kind of capacity that was, you know, he was doing probably what 3/4 of the people out here, and it's not to insult anybody, you test, you play around, you whatever, and you figure out what the heck you're going to do in your life, and hey, man, if I keep doing this, I'm not going to go down the right path. And he was caught at the wrong place at the wrong time where he was used. He was used get back a personal vengeance from somebody else. He was used, right? I think there was an issue with a silly coffee table or something like that
right.
between one of these other guys that – basically put him in jail, but now want him out of jail, prison. So he was used. So he was a guy that wasn't perfect, just didn't party in like a lot of other people, and all of a sudden he's convicted of murder.
Right, because they thought he was young and naive, and they took advantage of him at that age, being that you're young at 18. And to back up what Jessica said, Michael was never found with any weapon. I want to make that clear. There was never any weapon found on him at any location where he had ever been. They've never found a murder weapon, but they did
mm-hmm.
find the actual murder weapon on Timothy, who is also serving life without parole. So they're saying that Michael is not eligible to be retried because he isn't actually innocent, but he is actually innocent because you're holding the actual murderer in prison for what you have all the evidence leading to.
It's as horrifying, almost, and maybe the same, I don't know, as somebody being murdered. Okay, so let's just give a moment to the victim of the murder, because we know that Michael Gaines did not do it, but let's just give a moment and some respect towards the man who was actually caught in the crossfires, was murdered, whatever it is, because I mean, the horrifying thing is, you know, that family believed, I'm not sure where they stand, that they had closure, okay? They probably believed they had closure. And the fact is, there really is no closure because they went after the wrong person. Mm-hmm. So with all due respect to Travis, am I correct?
That's right. That is correct. Yes.
Okay. Can you give me his last name?
Birchfield.
Okay. So I do, you know, I hope that we can all empathize with that family for their loss, and also, you know, so care about their loss. But there's another loss here that I'm sure if they knew the truth, or I'd like to believe if they knew the truth, that they would want to find out who really did this, despite the fact that it interrupts their closure, if there is such thing, when a family member is murdered. So I just want to send out my sympathy, my empathy to Travis and Travis's family. Rest in peace, Travis. We know you, too, were not a perfect person, but you did not deserve to be murdered. So we've got Michael Gaines in there, and he has lost his life. And his family, loved ones, desperately miss him and want him set free, rightfully so. All right, I just wanted to respect for that family, because that is a horrendous loss. I can't even begin to imagine. And but you can. You can, Christine. You can. It's happened to you and your family. Okay.
Yeah.
Carry on. Let's go.
I also want to make
Jessica.
In his case, as they were investigating, and like I said before, Michael was even brought into this as a suspect, but they had already coerced all statements, they had already put everything together, and they were trying to force Michael to plead guilty to a murder that he refused to do. He advised them that he was framed. You have officers who put statements together who asked him just to recite that stuff that they put together for him. So he has never had an opportunity to actually tell his story or say anything, like, other than today. This is really just his opportunity of getting a chance to let everybody know that not only was he framed, but it was a well-put-together crime per se, because everything that came out in those statements, I mean, we have a young lady who made a statement that said she was present when everything took place, but she actually wasn't even in the home. You know, Michael only knows maybe two or three of those people that are considered material witnesses. There's a guy
has proof been provided, Bree, that she actually was not in the home?
There is ongoing things that are taking place now that will also solidify that information.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
But,
that's wonderful. Okay.
There's a statement that was given where one of the gentlemen, he gave a false statement as well, but he gave that statement in exchange for having charges dropped against him for stealing PlayStation. These things were all put together, and none of the statements really flow together, so you can see the discrepancy in the actual information that's provided. I want to also say that they really did a really bum job, because after Michael was charged and sentenced, Michael requested from his lawyer to withdraw his guilty plea because he didn't have a clear understanding. Carl was his lawyer. He didn't even explain anything to Michael. He didn't walk through this will happen if you take these options. His main goal was to just make Ken Sue in it. The district attorney and whatever stories were put together with the police department, he just wanted to make them happy by just getting Michael involved to take a part in that.
I can guarantee he would have been disbarred by now if he didn't do it. That doesn't make it right by any means. But there have been many that have been disbarred for trying to expose the truth, not to mention the goons come to the house and they threaten them the day before and their families the day before. Literally, this is like serious. I'm not just saying this. Literally show up in the house and threaten the lives of of their families if they actually go forward with a matter in court the next day.
Well, that's basically what happened with them doing that to his mom.
Michael being 18 years old and the older guy being 25 years old, who would let their child hang out with someone who's 8 years their senior? You just want to be
Jessica.
Cool to them. They look up to the older guy. And the guy had no good intentions for Michael or anybody else involved in the case. Michael is just a follower. So teach your kids, don't be followers. And if you are a follower, I pray to God that you get a second chance and you don't have to sit in a cage for 18 years. My brother has been in prison. This will be his 18th year. He will be 36 this year. 36 years old this year and has been in prison for 18 years, half of his life in a cage. When he gets visits, most of his visits, my last five visits, for the 4 hours away, have been turned away. They have asked me about my undergarments and refused my visitation. They have talked
what?
About USC.
Okay,
yes.
Okay, which what
yes.
is the what's the prison? Which one is it?
I know the well, man I talked about. Which
Connie,
one?
Oklahoma. Dick Connors.
I mean, we're in Oklahoma, so we know there aren't many good ones, you know, at best there.
No, so imagine driving 4 hours away to go see your brother, and you're turned away. You don't get to see him at all. You don't get to go behind the glass. For any excuse they can use, they can pull up any excuse. You don't get a second. My most recent was I had underwire in my bra. I was not allowed to go to the store and change my undergarments. It was go home. Go drive back 4 hours away. No empathy at all. And he's innocent. So free Mike Gaines. He needs to be exonerated. Free Mike Gaines.
Okay. So we really I mean, I believe in the case, and I, you know, and there's been a lot of information that has been provided, but I know this has been a case that, you know, I've heard a lot about, an awful lot about. But when Bree contacted me about this, set up a time, and you know, and we got the facts together, and I said earlier, I believe I mentioned that to you, Jessica, that, you know, unfortunately, if we had 10 people doing what I'm doing right now, and there are people out there doing this, don't get me wrong, 24/7,
but
still is not enough.
Yes.
And that means that there's so much really, really bad, life-changing, not to mention if somebody's innocent and they are put to death, and what do you call that, matters that are going on. So your feelings about his public defender, I'd like to get this from both you, Bree, or from the three of you, Bree, and Jessica, and Melissa, because I know you know a lot about this case. What are your feelings about the public defender? Was he just inexperienced? Was he influenced? Was he aware that he better darn well do what he is being told or pushed to do?
Well, I believe that he was influenced.
I'm sorry?
I do believe that Carl was influenced to do exactly what was already put in order. And they had already prepared a story, and his job was just to make Michael follow through with it. So I don't feel like he had effective counsel at all. I do feel like Carl did not adequately handle Michael's case, period. And what I was going to say is that he never gave Michael any of his paperwork. So Michael literally has been sitting for 18 years. He's requested it from Carl. Carl never sent him his paperwork. So he literally knew nothing about his case, what anyone had said about his case. And then when we did go back to try to request it, they forgot, the indigents, that they forgot to reach out to him and ask him if he wanted his paperwork. So they've destroyed it. So he has absolutely information at all.
The same thing with all those rape kits that have been destroyed. You know, that's just a game that they play, and they need to be held accountable for this. So what do you think, guys? What do you think, people, that, you know, what are we going to do about this? Are we going to start a petition for, you know, to make the matters that are actually still being fought, that those records cannot be destroyed? Are we going to show up at the next rally in Oklahoma City, which we're waiting until we know when this when that building is done, so they are actually having the rallies again, and of course COVID too? What are we going to do? We're going to invite, we're going to ask your representatives, your governor, your Attorney General to show up, to listen. It's on the record. Send the emails. Make the complaints. Put it on the gosh darn record that you have made these requests to review these cases, okay, to review these cases, put it on the record, take a screenshot, send it to me. Please send it to me at injusticeinoklahoma@gmail.com because we're collecting them. I'm collecting them. If we are not following the chain of command with who we complain to, then we cannot complain about that person. But when that person or those people are not doing what their jobs are doing, when they're suffocating your constitutional rights, the victim's constitutional rights, when they are suppressing evidence, when they are denying due process, we have so much evidence that this is systematic in Oklahoma. Something will be done. We need your participation in this, people. So send the emails, provide the evidence, and let's see those cookie cutter emails come back to you telling
guys,
that you're not, that it's not in their jurisdiction, that they don't handle those cases. I'll take it from there. Let's go.
Yes, you can't, and I actually want to say something about that. I'm here in Connecticut, and anybody at any time can reach out to their representatives, their senators, anybody in the legislature, as well as Oklahoma, www.okhouse.gov. If you don't know who your representative is, you can find out on that website. Letters, emails, the telephone numbers are there. People, I notice, are taking a big interest in wrongful convictions just with the way that everything is happening these days. And a lot of people don't know exactly what to do and the best way that they can help. But you have to start at the beginning. You have to change laws. And that's why I put myself in a position to try to go back to school so I can go into policy reform, because short of being an attorney, I think that that is the best way that I can make a difference. But anybody can make a difference that way. You can be heard that way.
Sometimes you're better off not being an attorney. You're an expert. You're an expert. Right. So let's talk about what would happen if there was a conviction integrity unit.
If there was a conviction integrity unit, then some of these officials that are committing these acts of misconduct may actually be held accountable for those acts. There are some very effective conviction integrity units in this country that are trying to do the right thing, integrity. And with those units comes accountability, but you have to create a unit that's effective. You can't just create a conviction integrity unit to say that you have one, because then it's not serving its purpose. You need a collaborative effort. There are models that have proven successful.
Right, there needs to be transparency, and that's the big
Absolutely.
Word, transparency.
Transparency. Transparency. If people don't know it exists or how to use it, then what use is it?
Right. So if they do that for the facade, as if they're actually doing the right thing, and the beauty of the conviction integrity unit is judges are not the overseers. They're not in the conviction integrity unit. Are there lawyers in the conviction? Tell us all who encompasses the conviction integrity unit, CIU, and how it can work in favor of those that are actually making human mistakes. Okay, because not every bad case is one that is engaged in public corruption. We've got to get that clear.
Well,
We've
conviction
get
integrity.
That clear and
yeah.
Pray to God that there's nobody that's lost their life as a result. So there's human error, and then there is public corruption, which, in my opinion, that is what happens more often than not in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, conviction integrity units are set up within the district attorney or the prosecutor's office, what have you. And their job is to review cases of defendants that have been convicted where there is some – so they do like a fact-based review of the cases where the conviction has already been secured, and they investigate legitimate allegations of actual innocence. That's their job. But they differ in how they're set up. So there's been there was a really good study back in 2016 by John Holloway, University of Pennsylvania. I think, Tanya, you had mentioned that you had looked at that study before.
Yes.
And we've even evolved
Go
now
ahead,
because that was
–
please.
That was back in 2016, and the model unit would consist of not only district attorneys and prosecutors, because that is not solving the problem. That's the same set of eyes looking at the same cases that either themselves, perhaps, or their colleagues were involved in the prosecution. So you need a collaboration. You need other attorneys. You need perhaps experienced defense counsel. You need Innocence Project attorneys. Queens, New York just set up a conviction integrity unit with the new DA that was elected there, Melinda Katz. I bring up Queens because I'm here on the East Coast, so I'm up on it. And she started a conviction integrity unit in January. And Bryce Benjet, who, if anybody doesn't know who that is, was an Innocence Project attorney who actually got Rodney Reese day of execution. And he's heading that unit in Queens, New York. That's the type of unit, and I'm watching it very carefully. They only started in January. So I'm watching very carefully to see how they progress with the cases and what cases they actually proceed on and what happens there. I take interest, and I'll talk to you about this case because I don't want to overshadow Michael's case. But there is a case there that I have been watching very closely and was very excited when they opened the conviction integrity unit. And I think that those are the models that work, because you can look at statistics for conviction integrity units and you can see units that have only had a few exonerations where they should have many more, but then you can see units like the one that Larry Krasner runs in Philadelphia, or Kimberly Ogg, and or the unit in Cooks County that are exonerating several, if not hundreds, of individuals. So there's a very big difference in the way one is operated from the other, and I think we need to come to some type of solidified research that shows which models really
to
work.
Use, right. Don't give too much latitude is what I think you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if there's too much latitude, it could lend to just an exacerbation of the issues at hand when it's corruption.
You need transparency and you need a collaboration. It can't be one-sided, because this is where we run into problems. And, I mean, we talk about Mike Gaines's case and public defenders. I mean, there's some very good public defenders, and I am not knocking every public defender. But a lot of cases with public defenders, their job is to plead out their clients. There's only less than 5% of all cases go to trial. So you know the job of most public defenders is to get a plea. Everybody's happy. It's like a well-oiled machine, and it works that way in some places. I've been in the legal profession for 22 years, and I've been in courtrooms a lot of that time, and I see how
it
works.
Run it through. Next.
It's a win for the prosecution. The public defender's office gets rid of the case. Somebody takes the fall. Everybody, you know, and the system is happy. The system is happy, not the victims of the person who was the subject of the crime, because to me, justice is not convicting the wrong person. Justice is finding the person who really did it with some integrity behind that. And then the person who is wrongfully convicted, their family loses them. So who's winning?
I couldn't agree more, because it can go wrong. It can go wrong. If it's not done right, it can go wrong. And it can actually appear as the facade as creating credibility for the corruption that nobody knows about, as opposed to making things right. That's crazy. That's crazy stuff.
You know, with Michael's case, if there was the conviction integrity unit in place, perhaps he wouldn't be sitting there for all these years.
Absolutely.
And Perry Lott would have been, and those that
Perry
have
Lott,
been actually brought to death.
Julius Jones and Richard Goslett. The list goes on and on.
It does. It does. And a lot of them are the same players, right? We've got David Prater, right?
Yes.
David Prater.
Yes.
And then there's an investigator. Oh, I'm trying to think of her name. They're actually... It's my understanding and belief from what I've seen in the past, and I'm going by memory right now. I have to say, allegedly, I'm protecting liability, that they're responsible for innocent
people. Who are you talking about, Tanya?
People being put to death. There have been innocent people that have been put to death.
at the hands of the same people. So there is a pattern. And it's absolutely, I mean, your jaw, just when you go through this stuff over and over and over again. We've got Tim Henderson, Oklahoma City Court, right? He's the judge. He's known as a hanging judge. And, you know, that's not anything other than pretty much the depiction of what Timothy Henderson is, along with the prosecutor, the investigator, that that predetermined, in my opinion, and many others, who's guilty and who isn't. And the thing that really bothers me more than anything out of this isn't just the corruption, but where is the beyond a shadow of the doubt when it comes to criminal convictions? Where is that?
Well,
civil,
it's also
that's a different threshold.
It's also supposed to be innocent until proven guilty, but in some of these cases, that just doesn't seem to have ever been the case.
And in this case, I will say, I do know that everybody involved knew that who was guilty and who wasn't, but it was a matter of who had the money and who didn't. And
exactly.
I want to do one thing really quickly, because I think that just so I can just clear one thing up for everyone to understand, that if Michael, because that's how they're trying to paint the picture of him as being the actual mastermind, the perpetrator, someone that put it together, I always have
to say,
if Michael was the person responsible for doing all this, why would anyone have to drug him? If why drug the mastermind if he was the one that put it together? I mean, these are just little things in that sort of an aspect that I'm saying you can see where it is, things were not taken care of properly, but it's okay. They feel like they can sweep the rug as long as they have enough people to actually stand up for what they're wanting to put on him. And I don't feel like that kind of stuff, as Melissa said, there's no integrity behind anything that makes you question every case that comes across anyone's desk, because you're so...
I'm so sorry.
You know,
I'm sorry. Your family's gone through so much. He's going through so much. I'm so sorry this is happening. I'm just so sorry. I'm sorry. I just needed to tell you that.
Why?
Come on, people. Come on. Write those emails. Write them. Let's go. Write the emails. Send them in. Not just for Mike Gaines, but for everybody. What you need is a conviction integrity unit. We need to get these dirtbags out of there that don't care about the lives of other people because it might compromise their position. Arthur Bean, Marty, can you bring on Arthur Bean? He is on hold.
He's on hold.
Arthur
I don't have him, Tanya.
Oh, goodness. He just messaged me. Let me see. Said he's on hold just about a minute ago.
Well, let me call
Tanya.
Back.
Oh,
Tanya.
Wait a minute.
Oh, wait a minute. There
he is. Arthur Bean on. We have Arthur Bean on. Private investigator.
Tanya.
Okay, there you go.
Yes. Okay.
So I guess I was on all along. Yes. I wasn't on hold, I don't guess.
All right, one person at
no.
a time. I heard my name whispered out there.
That's
talking
me.
To me.
It's B.
Jessica?
Michael's mother
Bree?
Just texted me and asked if you would mind putting her on. She wants to talk to you.
Who is that?
She's
okay.
Michael's mother. She just asked me if you could link her in because she wants to talk.
Marty,
what
are you
the
listening?
Last four numbers? Yes, yes.
Okay.
What are the last four numbers?
Oh, dear.
Three, five,
okay.
3572. Okay, I got her. There you go.
Thank you, Marty. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
Tanya?
Yes.
Tanya. She's on.
Yes. Hello. Hi, Mrs. Gaines.
Hi.
Am I on?
Yes.
You are
yes.
on yeah. with us. Thank you so much for calling
yes.
us. And it's important
yes.
that people get to hear your voice. Arthur, we know you're there. Hang in there. Yes, Mrs. Gaines.
I'm
can
here.
You talk
so,
with
good
us?
Evening, yeah, everyone.
Good evening.
Good evening.
And first of all, thank you all for doing this for my son. And it's just not for him. It's for the family and for all the other ones out there. So I've just been listening and just kind of want to kind of express, I think a lot of times we kind of miss the mark of what's really going on. And honestly, the way I feel about this is that, yes, my son is innocent of murder. He's guilty of being around the wrong people at the wrong time. Timothy, Daniel, Dante, these were guys that my son normally wouldn't hang around with. So I do believe that he was drugged. But we just want a voice. We just need a voice. We need someone to listen to us. It's just like, how do you take an 18-year-old child, a baby? And we all know that women, our minds mature faster than males. So at 18, what did he really know? You know, and I don't want you to think that
know?
It
that's
right.
pretty new. Yeah.
So, like I said, I just want us to have a voice. I want my son, just like Jessica said, to have a second chance at life. You take someone at 18, and you might as well have put them on death row. And I heard Bridget, you know, explain to you all that even at that time, what his lawyer was telling me, the way he explained it, he said, if you have 12 people on the jury, more than likely they're going to be 12 white people. And so their lawyer is going to present to them, what if that was your mother or your grandmother that got killed? And so he said that they would give Michael the death penalty. And me as a young mother at that time, what am I supposed to think? I had never been through anything like that. So all I could think was to tell my son, we can't have you on death row. We can't not see you. So, you know, don't take that plea. If they're telling you not to go to court, again, what do I know? What does he know at that time? So
right.
I just think we had a really bad deal, and now it's like nobody will listen. So I'm just
you
asking
and
you all
staff
to help
of
us.
Others, and that's what should set these people that are wrongfully convicted free, okay? You and a stack of other people, we are here to talk about Michael Gaines' case. Don't get me wrong. But when you can show the evidence of the patterns of the wrongful convictions by the same actors, in other words, prosecutor, investigator, even judge, of course, you know, when they're denying what needs to be in front of the jury, what needs to be admissible, when they're denying that, then if we can show, when we bring it forward, then guess what? It gets to the point where somebody's got to pretend to be the hero to make themselves look good and make what's wrong right. Or we'll do it on our own. We'll just go to the next level. And that's why it is so, so, so very important, so very important to actually go ahead and send in, take a screenshot of those emails. Take a screenshot offering the evidence. Take a screenshot of what those freaking cookie cutter replies are that deflect you, that tell you they don't do this, they don't do that, and most of the time I can prove, oh, yes, they can, and send it. Please send it to me. Please. I'm trying to help, okay? I want to make a difference to injustice at Oklahoma. Injustice in Oklahoma injusticeinoklahoma@gmail.com. Please
okay.
send it to me. injusticeinoklahoma@gmail.com. Please, because if we go case by case by case instead of collaboratively, I mean, we get to hear about people's cases and how wrong they are.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about it. But when they know there are the masses that say, we know about this case, why aren't you replying to me? All these victims are lining up and basically saying the same thing, getting the same thing back. And we can do something. Please. Okay, keep going.
Okay, I'm good with talking now. I know you had Mr. Marty that was going to talk, so I'm good.
Arthur Bean, are you on with us?
Yes. Hello?
Hi.
Yes.
How are you doing? What kind of patterns are you seeing here?
Well, I see a pattern in Comanche County all the time with defendants. And they're really racially biased down there in Comanche County, too.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I wish I couldn't say that out of my mouth, but they are. And for 18 years old and sentenced to life without parole, you know, and it's my argument that under the Oklahoma Constitution, Article 28, Subsection 5 would even protect somebody under the age of 21 from consuming alcoholic beverages because of their youth, their inexperience to deal responsibly with the effects of intoxication. And so the adolescent mind still developing until 24 or 25.
Right.
Yeah. And we've argued this in the federal court, too, trying to extend the law under Graham, Miller, and Montgomery to those adolescents that were just over 18, 19, all the way. I'd like to see it extended to 21, because life without parole is the harshest sentence one can get. And even at 18 years old, they're still juvenile. And you got to look at their background and how they were brought up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what were their influences, you know, when they, you know, just like the wood mitigation of the death penalty. You got to look at all them factors. And now there's been some other federal courts that have extended Miller, Graham, and Montgomery to people over 18 years old, Cruz versus, I think it was out of the Fourth Circuit, it was a Cruz, because U.S. versus Cruz, I think, was the case, that the judge had extended it to 18 years old and said that it wouldn't be unreasonable under Miller to extend that to somebody that was 18 because Miller didn't say that that was the cutoff line. But I think it's kind of arbitrary that you're going to allow a court to arbitrarily make a set number determination on age of, automatically you're an adult just because you look like one and you're 18 years old. It's almost like we're dealing with scientific evidence for readopting the Frye standard on the general acceptance of expert testimony instead of having it applied reasonably to the facts and the data of a case based on science, you know?
Right. Right. Right, exactly. You know, what's interesting is I know of cases where they've held on to charges until somebody has turned 18. Talk to us about that, please.
Well, when those kids are growing up, hell, they're not even old enough to vote. I mean, they're not even old enough to buy alcohol. They're not even old enough to buy ammunition in a store. You got to be 21.
Right.
If you look at Justice Sotomayor's dissent, I think it was Sotomayor in Maryland, Virginia versus LeBlanc, they found that you couldn't deny a juvenile offender parole after 4 decades in prison for any reason whatsoever. And that's kind of what then we had I can't even remember the name of the case. Lee Boyd Malvo, the sniper up there, I think in Maryland. And
yes.
They changed their law.
And his
they
father,
changed their
right?
law.
Okay.
Yes. And they changed the law dealing with the way that they would give parole to those guys, you know. And here we are now today, let's, you know, I've looked into this Michael Gaines case before. I've looked at this affidavit that they presented where somebody had said that Michael was under the effects of probably PCP that was on some marijuana that he had smoked and that
That's
he
right.
didn't know it. Yeah, this is a public record, too, because he's already argued an affidavit. And I thought, well, if you could get an expert to testify to the effects of the intoxication, that could remove him from the mens rea component
mm-hmm.
that would be required for first-degree murder, especially if he was deprived of reason. But I've seen some cases out of Comanche County that I believe they switch and blame it on somebody else, and they end up taking the fall for it. They get more time. They get wiped out. And I can't see this case really being a little bit any different, really. Not just from seeing the facts how they come out. I've seen a case from the early 1970s that involved similar circumstances about a man coming back from the military, and he'd been out drinking and got intoxicated and passed out. He said, "I don't remember killing nobody." He said, "I remember getting a fight, but," he said, "I didn't kill nobody." Well,
mm-hmm.
when he woke up, you know, he was a black man, and he was hanging around with a white woman and a white man, and he woke up in their apartment and think the white people killed him, but because he was black, they wanted to blame it on them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there is no doubt there is discrimination that goes on. I also know that there are people, you know, as I brought up earlier, that are on death row and that are discriminated against just because it's not what
let's talk about
because
Julius
the
Jones
prosecutor
for just
wants
a second.
There to be a finding. But this is
there's definite ties to race and wrongful convictions. I think we know that. And
yes,
out of
do.
Since and this is information that comes from the invaluable National Registry of Exonerations. There have been over 2,500 exonerations. So that's the only way we can really measure wrongful convictions at this point, because we know that these are people who have been wrongfully convicted because they've been exonerated. We don't know the people that still exist in the system who haven't been exonerated. But out of over 2,500 exonerations, just about 50% of them are African-American. They don't make up 50% of the population. We all know this. They make up just about 13%, but they make up
mm-hmm.
half of all wrongful convictions.
Wow. Wow.
And that's empirical research. That's a stat that if anybody wants to research it, it's a fact.
Anybody wants that information, please contact me or Melissa. If you want to give your information, that's fine. Contact me at injusticeinoklahoma@gmail.com. I will be sure to get that information to her so she can provide that for you. Or if you want to share that information right now, that's up to you. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah,
if you want to contact.
Absolutely. I'll just say I am in the master's program for criminal justice right now, And the project that I did for my data analysis in criminal justice was race and wrongful convictions. And the National Registry mm-hmm. of Exoneration sent me their whole spreadsheet in Excel format so I could do my project. And so I turned that Excel spreadsheet into SPSS data analysis, and I ran the numbers. And those numbers are factual. And like I said, 50%. And I mean, you can look at things like perjury and false testimony, which involves informants who give false testimony. 1,469 cases have involved that. 1,353 cases involved official misconduct. Mistaken eyewitness identification, 723 cases. In each of those categories, African Americans are highly overrepresented.
Oh boy. So I just wow. I want you guys to know that I have just shared, or I'm in the process of sharing right now, on the Facebook page, Injustice in Oklahoma, at gmail.com, some statutes on crimes and punishments, okay? And the thresholds to meet them, I just shared that now, Injustice in Oklahoma at gmail.com, just shared it. So go below the promotion because that's acting as an announcement pinned on top. Do your own research. Do the research. I'd like, just before we get too much further and we run out of time, I'm going to invite you all back on again next Tuesday, okay? So we can give what just happened tonight, the information that has been provided, some thought, and we can share some more information. I have got Indy from New Jersey on with us right now. How are you? And what is your comment or your question? We're very happy to have you on. Hello? Is Indy there?
Me. Hello?
Okay, you're there.
Hello?
You're with us. You're with us.
Oh, okay.
Hi.
Okay. Hi. How are you?
Awesome. How are you?
Good. I'm listening. Well, I'm not surprised. I think that in African-American community, we, not that we like it, but we're used to hearing stories like Michael Gaines of being unlawfully convicted. But I think one of the things that is missing. Can you hear me?
Yep. You're on
okay,
with
sorry.
Us.
So,
I think is everybody
thing,
okay? Can we hear Indy?
Yes,
yeah,
I can hear. One of the things I
yes.
think
okay.
is missing when we talk about these type of cases is the history, a systemic racism in this country, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to the prison system. And what's not talked about is the whole purpose in the history of the prison system when it comes to African Americans. The prison system is another form of modern-day slavery. And if we look at how all this forms, a lot of times, it's nice that they're exonerating, but that's not enough. Before you even get to that, there's something called the school-to-prison pipeline, where
Absolutely.
African-American students are not given the same type of encouragement, an opportunity, and I said it because I'm a former high school teacher. So in the inner city in New Jersey.
Would you like
so
to
I
give us a little bit of a background so our listeners understand where you're coming from?
Well, I am a former high school teacher who taught in Essex County. And if anyone knows Essex County in New Jersey, that involves North Irvington, East Orange. So I worked in,
yep.
in the Irvington community.
I know Irvington.
Yes.
Okay.
So... and I'm also a recent PhD graduate student who researches about diversity, race, and gender concerns when it comes to the educational curriculum, K-12 curriculum, how students are taught and what they're not taught. So that's my research in the background. But when we look at these, a lot of people forget the history of why we have a prison system. and why black men are the majority in the prison system. And that's always missing. You know, I looked at, I just briefly looked at a part of his case with having a public defender that wasn't prepared. These are things that are not by, these are things that are not an accident.
No.
And if we live in a system that looks at African Americans as not quite human. And people
not
are treated
quite,
in a
quite what? I'm sorry.
Not quite human.
Okay.
As almost like subhuman. There's been plenty of research and documentation on this. But there's a, we forget that, we don't talk about the history of why black men are imprisoned higher than anyone else. And even if it's the same crime, I'm not saying people don't need to go to jail for crime, but if it's the same crime, white men are usually given a less sentence than a black man. There's a whole lot of historical racism that's not really discussed on why, and why we're still here today having these same conversations.
Stay with us, Indira.
Okay.
Arthur and Melissa, what do you have to say about this? Do you concur? Because I know you're both phenomenal researchers of fact. Do you concur?
Mm-hmm.
I think you will.
Yes, I most definitely concur.
Okay.
I think that we have to address history, and I don't think a lot of us want to do that. It's an, and I'm not speaking for myself, but for others, it's an uncomfortable subject to address. Well, we can't continue to base our justice system on the status quo being uncomfortable with bringing up that discussion, because you can't cure a problem in the middle of it. You have to go to the roots of the problem to cure it. And this is my biggest thing right now, especially with the way things are. People want to recite statistics on, you know, different crime statistics, black on black crime, and but they don't want to address why it happens that way. They don't want to have that discussion.
Okay.
So
okay.
I definitely concur.
This is a very healthy
discussion.
I've been told by our producer that we have 3 minutes left, so I need, unfortunately, to begin closing out. But I'm going to ask every single one of you, Bree.
Yes.
Jessica. Oh, Melissa. Marissa. I'm sorry. Arthur. Indira. Indira. I'm sorry. I apologize.
That's okay.
To return to our show. Because we will have a part two on this next Tuesday at the same time. Can everybody commit to that? Is everybody on board or as long as you can? Yes,
I can.
This is Melissa, and I will be here next week.
Yeah, we've got lots more to talk about the Mike Gaines case and the wrongful conviction, what is needed, how to get there. Let's use Oklahoma as a model, people. Come on. You know, when something goes right, sometimes it's hard in the meantime. Good change can be very uncomfortable. But what you look at the end, once you can see the forest through the trees, what we care about is making what's wrong right, and whoever is responsible for the public corruption or the errors, they just make it right. If we can just start here, I want to hear from you all. Please, I want to hear from you all. I need you to follow through on this.
Tanya, is it okay if I let everyone know that if they had questions or if they're still just questions, they can log onto his website at www.justiceformichael.org. It has all of his social media links and his petition on there. Just maybe if there's something I didn't say that they can kind of go on and fill in the blanks, and maybe they have questions.
Provide
for
that
for
one more time, real quick. And listeners, you know that you that these people will be back on again.
And you can
find my petitions. We'll be back on again. Provide that one more time.
It's www.justiceformichael.org.
And he has a change.org petition, so anybody can sign that petition. We need some notice to his case. We need some more signatures. So anybody listening who feels compelled to know more about his case, please go check it out and sign that petition.
Sign it. Send your emails. Screenshots. Send it to me. Join us on Sunday at 7 o'clock Central Time. Okay, figure out the rest. I'm on Mario CS Radio Network and Stephen Burke's 89.9 KLRB FM in Oklahoma. If you're there, tune in there. Join us for this really, really matters. Join us to hear a last hello from some candidates. I tell more, but I don't have time. I'm in Oklahoma. Some for re-election and some for election, okay? And as well as James Treat from Hughes County, Oklahoma, who expose, sanction, get rid of these ugly, corrupt, malfeasant people, and let's be free from the public corruption. Let's live as the Constitution was meant to be. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in.
Thank
There's
you,
more
Tanya.
To come. God bless.
Thank you.
Thank you.